grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Dudes and Beer Podcast, episode 281 for you tonight. How about that, everybody? Our fifth anniversary last week was fantastic. I want to thank everybody that tuned in. I want to thank everybody that's been tuning in for 5 years, including our audience out in WMLD land, way out there in the Hudson Valley. Hey to all of you guys. Please do not forget, everybody, Dudes and Beer is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you are a fan of podcasting like me and want to start up a podcast for yourself, your family, business, church, friends, what have you, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. That is where we can help you, folks. I am one of the owners there. We provide one-on-one advice, everything from technical advice on what equipment to get, how to hook it up, how to start it, how to record, branding, distribution, monetization. We do audits for shows that already exist. Stop on by and check us out today. PodcastCadet.com is the website. Dudes20 is the code that you want to use to save 20% off of that. Our guest tonight is one of the amazing guests that actively called in to us last week for our fifth anniversary and left us a message. Our good friend James Keenan, researcher and author of the new book, The Shapeshifter Scare, which is available on Amazon and other places, I assume, correct? James, how are you this evening?
Hey, Chris. Doing well. Thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely, man. I remember last time we had you on, we were talking about ancient cataclysms and the stories of ancient cataclysms throughout mankind, the way that they mesh together. And we started kind of getting into a little bit of some of the tribes that lived in, like the Anasazi, things like that. There in the Southwest region, and you mentioned that you were getting ready to go do a new investigation out at the Uintah Basin and out near Skinwalker Ranch, and I was like, you've got to come on. And when I saw that you released Shapeshifter Scare, I immediately went and purchased my online copy of it. Make sure to go on by and check that out, folks. It is great if you've got any youth out there. James really hovers up around the young adult market. But man, what a great read. And what I love is the fact that you put this research into your book.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fictional author. I'm just now working on my first nonfiction, which is going to, a large part of that's going to include what's taking place out on the Uintah Basin. But I definitely wanted to have that information available in my next fictional novel for children. And The Shapeshifter Scare is part two of the UFO and an Alien series that's geared towards, you know, teaching probably from anywhere from ages 9 to 13 about the paranormal, cryptozoology, things of that nature.
Yeah, and what's wild is that that area specifically in the Southwest, the right there where the two tribes cross over, is rife with stories back to Native American days of what they call the Skinwalker, things like that. It's called Skinwalker Ranch because of a supposed curse placed on it by the Navajo against their opposing tribe who enslaved them regularly.
And yeah, that's the Skinwalker Ranch. Yeah, it's that's where it gets its name currently. And before that, it was known as the UFO Ranch. So, yeah. I mean, there's just been a lot of strange phenomena taking place in that area for an extremely long amount of time, so far back that It's in petroglyphs from thousands of years ago.
Well, and let's start getting into some of that, because you were, the whole time you were there and posting stuff, I was liking, commenting, loving the stuff that you were posting, and you actually went out to some of these petroglyph sites. Let's kind of start getting into how you came to research this area to begin with, and then what the excursion was all about, James.
Sure. So I really didn't know a whole lot about Skinwalker Ranch. I had actually been to a MUFON meeting where the lecturer was George Knapp. And so I was familiar with it, but really didn't know a whole lot about it. What I was doing was in regards to the cataclysmic events that I research and past lost cultures and civilizations. I track this. One of those ways that I track it is through petroglyphs and pictographs and artifacts from indigenous people of old. And in northeast Utah, there were groups known as the Fremont, the Barrier Canyon, and then this culture that's marked as unknown because there's absolutely nothing known about them.
Yeah.
And their petroglyphs and pictographs are beyond interesting. What takes place in them. So I was focused in on that for my ancient catastrophic events and for lost cultures and civilizations, you know, like tracking the migration of the indigenous giants that were here. And lo and behold, I started getting deeper and deeper into the research and realized that Skinwalker Ranch is just a few miles from all these locations. So then I, shifted gears, obviously, because I'm interested in paranormal and cryptozoology, not just, you know, ancient lost civilizations, advanced civilizations and things of that nature. And it just, from there, it just boomed. And interesting how so much of what takes place even as far back as, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, somehow seems to tie in to what's happening in and around the ranch.
Yeah. And like we've been saying, the history of the ranch goes on for literally about 100 years, going way back to the original cattle drives, things like that, that went through the area. And some of the stories that happened there, I recently got the History Channel show. I'm trying to remember the name of it offhand. I think it's What Happened at Skinwalker Ranch. And they're of course, going into the history of Robert Bigelow owning the property for many, many years and doing research in collusion and working with the federal government. To this day, that research is unknown. Most of it is classified. The rest of it is confidentially marked. So the new owner that has it is out there working on things right now, and he actively has the show on the History Channel, things like that, that's showing quite a bit of anomaly, really, really strange stuff going on. One of them that's going on is like an energy spot about a mile above the ranch. That's just a field of RF energy that's there. It's strange, strange happenings, and they're trying to nail down if it's geologic. What was some of the stuff that you came across while you were out there on your excursion? Now, granted, you were not necessarily on Skinwalker Ranch itself. You were on adjacent property, but have done quite a bit of research into Skinwalker, things like that. So what was some of the things that you were coming across while you were out there at Blind Frog Ranch?
Yeah, so you know, when you talk about the area, it's not phenomenon, it's phenomena, because there are many different phenomena taking place. And, you know, like I said to begin with, the petroglyphs. So the Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch, the show on History Channel, came out at the end of March. And I started you know, I go up quite a bit now, regularly up to northeastern Utah. As a matter of fact, I was just there about 7 weeks ago. And these petroglyphs and pictographs show the phenomena that's taking place today. As a matter of fact, a large portion of my presentation when I'm out at the UFO conferences or, you know, the Enlightenment conferences and things of that nature, one of the petroglyphs shows this object in the sky that's obviously mechanical because it has uplift. It's being pushed upward and it's transmitting data out into space. And it's this rotating object in the petroglyphs shooting out this beam of energy, more than likely a transmission out to these marked stars and marked what I would assume is a galaxy. And now all of a sudden they're finding this object that's transmitting all types of frequencies, like you mentioned, RF, maybe some other type of light frequency. Same thing. And what's crazy is it seems to be going in and out of something. And when I say in and out of, from what they've suggested and what it looks like, is almost like a portal of energy in and out. Just and they've captured this on camera quite, you know, for quite a while. It was seen for several minutes on the show, so I could only imagine how much tape they actually had in order to give us that.
Yeah, and I mean, things on video, like straight up beams of light coming out of the Earth into space. Just strange oddities, wild things going on. And like you said, being recorded. Like, this stuff is, it's phenomenal now. Some of the things that are coming out in documentary, like Caroline Corey's new movie, Superhuman. Some of the things that are being released, of course, by the Pentagon, slowly, basically light disclosure, soft disclosure on what we know probably is more secret projects than anything truly extraterrestrial or interdimensional that we're dealing with. Not that it didn't come from that. But to even have Robert Bigelow, after owning this property for years, go out on interviews and say, from what I've seen, we are definitely not alone. There is another intelligence going on, and it's here.
Even with that, you know, that money that Bigelow was using came from Senator Harry Reid.
Yeah.
In that it was either the ATIP or OSAP program. There was $23 million, and a large portion of that $23 million, guess where it went to? It went to Bigelow for Skinwalker Ranch research, and whatever it was, it's still classified.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And that's what's very, very interesting about this new owner that has it, is he is being very open about it. He's gone out to major magazines and done interviews, Vice, all kinds of stuff, to go out and basically be like, yeah, we are, the research is carrying on. We're moving it on to a new level. And we're trying to do it to where it's not all classified or held secret afterward, by basically not including government money in the project.
Right, exactly. And Brandon Fugle is the billionaire that now owns the ranch. And he has a lot of connections. You know, he's connected well with the past people from the Bigelow era, you know, Dr. Eric Green, you know, I'm sure he's far more aware of what took place than what most people know. And he's afforded the public the opportunity to, you know, get tidbits, because there's a lot more going on. His main researcher is Dr. Eric Bard. He's a physicist who works there. And obviously, he has just a huge amount of data that he's been able to acquire during his 4 years there at the ranch working for Brandon. But it's really kind of cool because you know, a lot of people go out there, they witness something, or you're constantly reading about the same stuff in books, but there's very little scientific data or actual scientific research to back up phenomena that happens there, or to be able to provide and afford to for the public to see.
Yeah.
And now that's slowly coming out. That's a big part of what I do. Like I use a proton magnetometer, you know, to look into the magnetic anomalies and differences in the area. And like part of what I have found kind of goes with what Eric Bard has been leaning towards, with where he shows like these lights or beams of light coming out of the ground in all these certain areas. It goes with my data points where I have found 6-inch diameter locations all across that area that have just the strangest reading, magnetic readings taking place. And I can't provide an answer as to why it's happening. So it's good to be able to afford, you know, some data points, scientific data points, with the stories that have been out there for at least 40 years now.
Well, and you know what I like about it more than anything, because I myself have got quite a few of these tools. I mean, you can see some of them, like my Geiger counter and things like that, on the shelf behind me here in the Facebook feed. But the reason I have them is because, yeah, I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to look at something and run through everything in the field. I'm just going to be blindly collecting data, which is really one of the best things that you can possibly do, is to go out and just provide raw data. Just raw data. And for you to be coming in as someone who's not a scientist and providing that information to scientists is absolutely invaluable, because you're coming at it from an unbiased point of view. Sure, you're a believer, but you're also not a scientist or somebody in the community with something to, quote, prove or protect in some way, shape, or form, you know, some thought form that might destroy a scientific community. We talk a lot on this show about the religion of science. We spoke with you about that last time you were on, the religion of history and the science of history, and how so many times we do not take into account other things, such as oral histories, that kind of stuff, which should account for a lot.
Well, actually, yeah, there's a, you know, when you're talking about the scientists, the historians, you know, they're protecting something that they've been taught, that was taught to them, and they don't want to change it for obvious reasons. It's going to, you know, affect their livelihood. Yeah. And my being an avocational archaeologist, you know, I affords me the opportunity to be a little bit more vocal about what I find, or, you know, what my hypotheses or theories are.
Precisely.
And being able to still collect data, or being open to both sides, allows me to be able to make contact with some of those, you know, hard data scientists. And
exactly.
And collect things that they're not capable or able to do, just because they don't want to be blown out of the water, as you know, you kind of mentioned, in their profession or their professional circles, which I get it. I understand, you know, from a monetary standpoint and being able to, you know, make a living.
Yeah,
it's understandable, but it's unfortunate for the majority of the population that, you know, as we're progressing through this life, especially recently, a lot more stuff is being made known. You know,
exactly. I mean,
just look at the fact that the government released, you know, video on the fact that they came up against a UAP that they have no clue how its performance capability, you know, is managed. And
yeah,
I think we're finally starting to go into that direction, and not just the UFOlogy realm, but in cryptozoology, then the paranormal. You know, people forget that paranormal, that just means it's something that we don't quite understand yet. It could be scientific phenomena that in 100 years from now, they'll look back and laugh at us for having not realized it.
Yeah, I mean, literally the term only means outside of the norm. That's all it means. Doesn't have to mean like of ghostly origin, of alien origin, or anything like that. And I think that's where people really kind of get hung up, James, is that they even with the current you brought up the UAP issue going on right now and the disclosure with that, as did I, and you know, going into that, even it's the fact of are you ready for the possibility that it's not extraterrestrial? Are you ready for that possibility? Because you kind of have to be. You kind of have to be ready for the fact of maybe it was reverse engineered from another technology, but it may be utterly earthbound, you know? And we have the responsibility to, like you were saying, to be scientific. Even though we're believers, we still have to be skeptical about the data that we bring in. Which is where I get into a big, big issue with a lot of the, quote, paranormal shows on TV. You know, it's one of those like, no, it's not all an orb. It's not. As someone who did paranormal research for a little while, like, you really do have to dispassionately come to your information.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
go ahead.
And right along that same line, you know, you see a lot of these people, they're carrying this technology and they're throwing out the word EMF, yeah. And you ask them, well, what does that stand for? And they can't tell you. And then you ask them, well, the data that you're seeing, explain it to me. They have absolutely no clue what the hell they're looking at.
Yeah. And, precisely. And even the fact of, I got a problem, especially whenever it comes to EVP recordings, because technically, like, the original concept of that was playing with an electromagnetic field. Now, how that electromagnetic field is randomly going to make ones and zeros in that digital recorder, I don't know. because that's what a digital recorder is doing. See, it's not recording an electromagnetic print of the audio that it's hearing on electromagnetic tape, which can be influenced by an electromagnetic field. It's recording a one and zero representation of the audio it actually heard. So, like, I don't know. I don't... that's where my skeptical mind as an audio engineer immediately goes is, no, it doesn't work that way. I can't magnetically just put ones and zeros on the hard drive of my computer. The power it would take to do that would literally destroy the machine. As far as electromagnetic current goes. So it would be strange. So you really do have to be ready to be skeptical about the information that you get from the get-go. And be willing to put all strange things aside and bring it down to something totally within the realm of norm and not paranorm. What was it about some of the readings that you were getting, like you were saying, using the magnetometers, things like that, that really led you to the conclusion of outside of the norm?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I would go to locations south of Skinwalker Ranch and directly north on the Mesa, all the way up to the ridge, the Skinwalker Ridge, and then into the Ute Reservation area where Bottle Hollow Reservoir is. Mm-hmm. And I would take a certain amount of data points, probably about 80, and I would come up with a medium milligauss level of what the what the magnetic field was for the Earth at that area. So if I took 80 readings and I averaged and it came out to about 48 milligauss, what was happening was I would take a reading probably every 8 to 10 feet in a straight line and do this in maybe 6 to 10 lines. I kept coming across certain areas where the reading of, the magnetic reading for the Earth at that location was doing something that it just can't be explained. And what it was giving me anywhere from a negative 14 milligauss reading all the way up to 42, which is clearly way, way far away from any average. And then let's say if I were to get an anomalous reading of 36, but it stayed around 36, well, that would immediately tell me that there's something ferrous or some other metal object causing that in the ground. And maybe that's something that we should look at buried below. That's when I would maybe pull out my GPR and see if I could pick up with the ground penetrating radar. But in these areas, to constantly be having these transient numbers changing from a negative 14 to a 42.
That's huge.
In a location that's average of 40. It's huge because it shouldn't be happening. The magnetic difference of the Earth's core and the reading for the Earth in that location shouldn't be doing that, and it really shouldn't be going into the negatives.
Well, no.
And there were these certain spots in a row. They were all – when I put them into the software – they were in a straight line over 2.4 miles. And I'm almost certain that once I'm able to get on to the ranch to take the additional readings in that same row or area down that line, I'm going to come across these same I hate using the word anomaly because it can mean so many things, but I'm going to do it a magnetic anomalous read in the same 6-inch diameter locations. So, and it goes a lot with what was being seen on the show as to these certain spots that were transmitting some type of frequency, some type of, light frequency out of them.
Yeah, precisely. And that's what it was showing on the show, was that there was literally a beam coming out of these holes in the ground that were maybe big enough for a person to get into, maybe, and just wild RF readings, wild. And it wasn't until they started putting the tri-field meters into into coffee cans to isolate the RF that they found out that it was not coming from the ground. It was not coming from any of the surroundings. It was literally coming from the air above them, and they triangulated it to about a mile, and it was just one of those, like, what is producing an RF field a mile in the air that cannot be seen? It's just there's something, like you're saying, you hate using the words anomaly, but there should be nothing there that's putting out an RF field that can be measured in that kind of way. And like you're saying, a magnetic field being measured in that wide of a range. Now, granted, folks, the North Pole right now is going cattywampus. It's moving at like an eighth of a mile a day almost, or 0.08 miles a day. It's crazy. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it would be affecting your instrumentation like that, and that's a huge milligauss range to be sweeping between actively when sitting still.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just another addition when you see everything that's starting to come out as to why the area has this aura of strangeness about it, because until you go up there, I mean, there's a lot of disbelievers, and I get it. I've been out in the field all over this world, so I've seen some strange phenomena. But I absolutely love going to the Uintah Basin just due to the fact that the geological makeup of it is like nowhere else in the world. I mean, it has certain things like gilsonite that are really not found anywhere else. There's a couple locations that have something like it, like in, I believe, in Iran and maybe in Russia, but nothing like the gilsonite that's there on the basin. And you had a massive lake that was there for millions of years. And there's just so many interesting things. I mean, you have east-west running mountains there and, you know, just so many things against the norm. But it really, when you look at the historical data that's available in the folklore or the mythology from the Native Americans, the indigenous people there, and these past indigenous cultures that were there thousands of years ago, and it seems like there were some very, very interesting paranormal phenomena and other types of phenomena already happening. And it's just now we're able to record it better than they were.
Well, and that's just it. Our technology gets better every year. It gets more portable every year. To be able to go out in the field now with handheld recorders that are picking up tri-field the way that they are and with the accuracy that they are. To be able to, good God, man, you're talking about going out with ground penetrating radar. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what kind of stuff did you find with the ground penetrating radar? And like I said, you were over at Blind Frog Ranch. Let's talk a little bit about that area, which, like we were saying, is kind of an adjoining property there, right up along the same lines. So let's get into some of the things that you started seeing out in that area.
Yeah, so again, it's just this huge amount of strange. When I was on Blind Frog Ranch, the owner and his son were, you know, nice enough to allow me to be there a full day and night. And we found some very interesting underground caverns and tunnel systems. And the measurements and the readings really made me feel, or if I had to draw any conclusions, I would say they were ancient, and I'm talking archaic timeline mines, that there were mines in operation there. What they were mining, I'm not quite sure. I have a pretty good guess, because what we collected mineral-wise is very interesting, and I'll keep that information private. I don't think they want that put out there. What was located.
Do not. I mean, I would have just a few guesses just from my geologic knowledge as a rocks and minerals nerd. You know, just a few guesses as to what's out there. I mean, it's definitely a copper rich area. There's definitely quite a few radioactive materials that are available pretty near the surface out there. So all kinds of fun stuff to be mined out in that area in Utah. And one of the curious things is it is actually directly northeast upwind from the original Los Alamos test sites, things like that in New Mexico. So that is something else that they have possibly attributed to some of the effects that go on out there. Some of the strange issues, like irradiated material, mountainsides starting to glow, just all kinds of wild stuff.
Oh yeah. And that's, you know, so the owner had told me about, he had drilled 75 feet down and found this blue dirt. And apparently that night, the entire, and this was years back, but that the entire hillside glowed in blue.
Wow.
There was UFO phenomena that took place over those mountains as they glowed.
Yeah.
There were, it was a lot of UFOs. And so as I took the technology that I had with me, which was EMF, RF readers, I had GPS, I had long distance ground sensing radar, GPR, ground penetrating radar. What's crazy is I went right above, he had sealed off the hole by putting a 3/4 inch plywood and dirt so that trespassers obviously wouldn't fall into the hole. But all my equipment malfunctioned, wouldn't work, including the GPS directly above this drill site. And then I actually showed this video. You may have seen it. I posted it. As I would walk away 10 feet, the GPS would start working fine. All the other electrical instruments would start coming back on. They would start taking data. I'd walk back over. Same thing. They would lock up. Couldn't pick up the satellites in the sky.
Yeah, and we've got the image of your no fix on the GPS up on screen right now from the image that you sent us. Where you got no GPS signal going on. And for those of you that know out there, for you to have a GPS receiver and not be able to receive a GPS signal, something's going on. Because the whole idea behind that is to be a transponder. It's not like your cell phone where you may have some, random interference or a loss in connection, something like that. That is a direct connection to GPS satellites whenever you have one of those.
Yeah, and you're talking about equipment I had that has never malfunctioned, no matter where I've taken it, and it malfunctioned continuously in the same spot.
Yeah, precisely. And we have Richard Adams chiming in right now with we're getting closer to finding out what is beyond Earth with Starship flying today. And, that's just it. We are constantly finding new paradigms of research, new paradigms of thought when it comes to science, when it comes to even vortex energies and ley lines. And, a lot of this stuff was poo-pooed by science for a long time as metaphysics, quote, and, pseudoscience. But there truly is a grid to the earth. There really is a way by which all of these energetic fields come together, and it's really wild whenever you start seeing anomalies. Yeah, are you there? I don't know what happened. We must have had a pretty major outage here on our end. So sorry about the situation there. But
no problem.
That's why I have the emergency dump of the phone. So we're still recording. Everything is still going live. We'll just kind of pick it up from where we were, talking about some of the latest technology that's out there that it's being used in the field to measure this stuff.
Yeah, there's what's interesting too about that, the Blind Frog Ranch is obviously the name Blind Frog. When they dug, they were drilling, they drilled a hole about 65 feet and all these blind frogs came out of the hole. Well, obviously that points towards there being some type of underground cavern or tunnel system, a whole ecosystem underground. Mm. And it makes you wonder, how far does this tunnel or cavern system or mine system really travel outward, and where does it go? Does it go underneath the mesa or through the mesa that's located north of Skinwalker Ranch?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And I mean, of course, there are the stories of government bases in Utah, underground, all kinds of stuff. But once again, these stories predate any government bases. These stories go back for a long, long time in history. So For that to be the case, I don't really think is the source of all of this. Maybe perhaps something, but not all of it. And there's definitely some wild things going on out there. What were some of the things that you measured? 'Cause you sent us some pictures of, like you said, the hole that was dug, out there. What else did they come to find as they dug the hole? 'Cause obviously out at Skinwalker Ranch, there's a general rule of they don't dig.
Yeah, no, that's not the case here. Like I said, it seems to be a very ancient mine system. I have this feeling that it's not natural, or at least not completely. And we found that like the main shaft when you enter, because it's all connected and it's actually filled up completely with water. And the first cavern system that you enter is at about 26 and a half feet, but there are caverns within this system underground. One is 70.1 feet deep. So you're talking about these huge areas underground that are filled. But unfortunately, every time they try to put in a submersible drone, the computer systems that power the drone and that they're able to steer it with lock up. And they've tried this three times, and I believe it was three times, and it just continues to malfunction. So, you know, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
But I know that it's a constant. It's not a one-off. It's always happening. And you have these same issues in and around the ranch, you know, and Blind Frog Ranch is just north of Skinwalker Ranch. So again, you're creating this lined up area with the Ute Reservation, with Bottle Hollow Reservoir, which in and of itself just has some incredible phenomena that takes place above it, in it, underneath it. And it continues to traverse like longitudinally through this area.
Now, you've been doing research in this not only arena, but in this general area for a long time. Is that right, James?
Yes, correct.
What about this experience was different for you from the other times that you've gone out, carried on investigations, things like that in the local area?
Well, you know, like I said, there were a few things. Obviously, the historical data is just really something to look at. I mean, it really looks, if we were to talk about, and I mean, you and I could speak about portals and what portals are they interdimensional, how do they work, for a long time, but there looks to have been something in that regards in use in that area a long time ago. And you have these very strange anthropomorphic creatures in the petroglyphs and pictographs. And there's a lot of them, you know, three fingers or six fingers, six toes, which represent giants, even from the Bible. And so you have that. Then you have, okay, so last time I was up there, I was with security for one of the other ranches that also investigates paranormal phenomena and other things like that. That's adjacent to Skinwalker Ranch. The head of security and I were there all day and night, and at one point we smelt something. And this is, I mean, I used to be a police officer, so I've smelt people that have passed and that have been dead for a long time. But this smelled differently. It smelled like that smell plus wet dog, like dirty wet dog, and
interesting,
like terrible flatulence altogether. And so we looked and looked for a carcass for a long time, and it was right on the south end of Skinwalker Ranch. There's up against the fence line, there's this huge brush that goes that maybe 8, 9, 10 feet high in some places. That's dead trees and all kinds of you know, rock formations and things that have built up over a vast amount of time and hasn't been picked out or cleaned up. And we looked and looked and couldn't find anything. 6 weeks later, after we smelt this, there was a paranormal group, and I forgive me, I forget their name, but they're pretty famous, and they go and they research all this. But they had two Native American trackers with them, and what the tracker in this group found out was there was, and this is what they were saying, that there was Bigfoot or Sasquatch in the area. And the tracker said that it happened approximately 6 weeks earlier, and they found hairs even that I believe they're getting analyzed. But that immediately when they called me, this whole group called and started talking to me, I was like, well, that's, I never smelt it before, but they were telling me that's what you guys were smelling. I was like, absolutely. That I didn't know that's what they smell like. And they asked me to explain what I just told you. And they were like, sure enough. So you have these interesting things take place like that. I have seen not three-dimensional, but two-dimensional lights in the dirt suddenly come to life, like a huge green glow to the ground out there on the mesa that when I came up on it, I couldn't explain what was taking place unless maybe there's something, you know, of luminescence in the rocks or maybe the dirt. But I checked it in the following morning and I couldn't find anything like that. So you're having just all kinds of different phenomena taking place, not the same thing. It's just this gamut of, it runs the gamut of the strangeness that you hear about or see all in one specific location, which is the Uinta Basin.
Yeah, and it really is, you know, like I hate using that term, but hotspot. It's everything from incidents like what you can like what you see with the Marfa lights out here in West Texas, which I got to experience last year. It's everything like what you're talking about with Sasquatch and Bigfoot. They have been sighted and in the area for, well, since Native American time, as well as the fabled Skinwalker, which is the demonic shape-shifting creature, as well as the magnetic anomalies, like every UFOs, everything pretty much considered paranormal happens at this one place and in this one region. And be it a geomagnetic anomaly that's causing it, something along those lines, it's still strange. It's wild to see, and it's great to know that there are people like you out there researching it regularly, and keeping their eye on this and keeping this going.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. The area. There's one part of there that's called Dinosaur National Monument. I mean, there's this area has found some of the greatest dinosaur fossils in the world in that location. And I think there's even a city called Dinosaur, if I remember correctly, right there on the Utah-Colorado border right next door. And what's interesting is there have been multiple sightings by multiple people of these massive wolves, dire wolves. I mean, you're talking about being in the right spot for something like that.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder, are we seeing creatures that we thought were extinct still living there, maybe underground? Or are we seeing maybe a shift in space-time and them coming from, you know, a different time?
Or a dimension?
Or maybe a crossover taking place there.
Yeah.
People have said they've seen Native Americans walking down the street that are in old dress, you know, but they turn around or they're still watching and they just suddenly disappear. So are we talking about a thin veil, you know, and really what is that? I don't know. But just based upon readings that you get, you know, different light radiation, you had mentioned RF and EMF, you know, what are the possibilities that we just don't quite understand yet taking place there in what you've termed and what a lot of people term as a hot spot?
Yeah. Well, and even so much so that, like, the University of Alabama at Huntsville sent scientists out there. I mean, there's been universities for decades sending people out to research things and try and nail stuff down. And there's not a single person that comes back with any kind of explanation for anything that happens out there. Not a single person. Where it's like, yep, this is what it is, you know, light aberrations coming through, nothing like that. There has not been a single university, a single study privately or obviously even by the government, because if it was done by the government and it was something to, quote, not panic about, you know, like, there's just a geomagnetic anomaly going on, they just publish it. They just say, yeah, there's a geomagnetic anomaly going on. It's all good. Don't worry about it. We've got one right down the road here, Wonder World in Texas, near Aquarena Springs, where, like, things roll uphill, you know. Things just go a little wonky. And these vortices are known to exist, but to have one that wide, to have one with that kind of breadth and with that kind of activity, there really isn't a whole lot of other place like it.
Yeah, it's definitely there's a lot of things that we're unaware of that I'm sure, you know, in the future will be explainable. It's just a matter of getting to that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the word paranormal or a UFO, you know, they have this negative aspect of what that means.
Exactly. And
really, a lot of people that you and I wouldn't think are investigating this really are. I mean, we touched upon it. What Bigelow was doing was government sponsored.
Yep.
And a good possibility of, or at least a portion of what was taking place, was, I believe, that Bigelow was investigating how that paranormal phenomena affected human beings.
Yes.
Without those humans being aware that they were the guinea pigs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a legitimate concern when you're talking about the military, you know. Something that they can't explain affecting their soldiers is of the utmost importance. The same with the UFO, something that they're incapable of keeping up with or performing the same way. It's a dire concern to national security.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that some of that paranormal activity that they came across there at that location was of such concern. A big one that's spoken a lot is about portals, the portals that appear there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, including scientists, have seen these portals in that location. and what they are, what comes out of them, you know, where they go to is of utmost concern to the government.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, right down the road is of course, the Stargate in the mountain in Arizona. Like, there's places like that all over the place where there are literal stargates built by the people. Like, they carved this thing into the side of a, or they didn't, it was just there in the side of a mountain, and the indigenous Indians claim that star people come out of it and that it's a portal. It's not the first place in America, it's not the first place across the globe. So to have that as a consideration and as a possibility is not unfeasible to me. Much like I've said about the UAP quandary, everybody, like you were just saying, always jumps to the word UFO as being extraterrestrial. Let's just keep it in the definition, folks. Unidentified. Let's just keep it there. We don't have to go extraterrestrial immediately. We don't have to go extra dimensional. We just got to figure out what it is to begin with.
Oh yeah,
it's unidentified. Let's just all agree on that, and then move forward from there.
Yep. And when you think about, in a lot of my lectures and presentations, I talk about ancient lost cultures and civilizations. There have been major, large civilizations before us that have been here on the planet, and they had far more advanced technology than what we have. And we're talking a long, long time in the past, like 130,000 years ago, even further back. And this technology was destroyed by a major cataclysmic event, along with the rest of their existence. Their civilization was wiped out, you know, where it was crushed underground, you know, it's at the bottom of the ocean, pushed back into the, you know, the man underneath the mantle. All this took place. There was 1,000 mile per hour winds that would have shredded everything, but still, like you and I know, a few artifacts or technology would have survived and remained, and at some point we would come across it. So are what we are seeing remnants of past cultures and civilizations that someone has currently come across and it's now in use? They may not know completely what the technology is, but they're learning how to use it.
Yes.
Or are these remnants of cultures or civilizations, did a fragment of them survive that maybe weren't their scientists? They were probably like the janitor at the local school.
Yeah.
But their civilization continued, but elsewhere, maybe below ground, or elsewhere in the planet. And what we're seeing are remnants of that old, old technology now being used again. And maybe some people in business and corporations or somebody's government are aware of this.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And, you know, whenever you're looking at this kind of situation, this kind of scenario, like what you're talking about, James, with the literal loss of technology, the loss of known culture, it is not that hard to do, folks. I'm Cajun. Let's take this as a prime example. I am Cajun. There are paintings that exist in my family's home, things like that, of little kids with dunce hats sitting in the corner. And it's literally a picture of them, like, saying, don't speak Cajun in school. You are hard-pressed now in less than 100 years to find somebody who speaks full Cajun. That's how fast a language and a culture can utterly disappear. And one that was spoken and used every day. It was literally an unchanged form of French from the 1500s. Like, it's one of the oldest known forms of French, but almost gone from our culture. Almost completely gone and forgotten. And that's how fast it can happen. Now, imagine that a major cataclysm happens and all the computers just get destroyed, except for this one hard drive that happens to be laying in a lead box somewhere that gets found 1,000 years from now. And we've got an agrarian culture, or a culture that is just restarting again technologically, and they come across a hard drive. Now, here's this piece of high technology that looks by itself without a computer utterly mundane, but held inside of it are literally the secrets of an ancient civilization. Could be the exact same scenario. Could be the exact same situation that we're dealing with right now, where the technology behind this is something that would be so mundane that we may not literally know how to harness it. We may have just forgotten how to do it and moved on down the technological path to something else. We've yet to figure that out. We've yet to find that out. And I think those are the things that we as a society really need to explore. Those are the topics that we really need to dig hip deep into, James, and go full bore into, because that's the only way that we will openly find the truth of who we are, where we came from, and why we're here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I always tell people we're, you know, standing on top of historical data. We've maybe found 5% of those lost cultures and civilizations. I mean, look in Mesoamerica. We're constantly discovering entire cities that 20 years ago had no clue. Like last year I was in Xihuacan, which is on the west coast of Mexico. And 25 years ago, they said that was impossible, that there were no advanced cultures that could have lived there. Yeah. And all of a sudden, we find a 10-square-mile city with temples that are covered in clay that have lasted 3,000-plus years, where in today's world, you know, clay stucco lasts maybe 10 years at the most before it has to be, you know, patched up at the least.
That's just it. Look at what we call concrete in modern engineering and how long it lasts without maintenance. And then go look at Roman concrete that cured underwater and lasts through erosion since the Roman Empire. Like, I would challenge you to pour a concrete column with modern day concrete and have it last for that long in water. It would not happen. We have yet to actively figure out the exact chemical formula that they used as the Roman Empire to make concrete stronger than what modern day concrete is. And that's just it. We attribute a lot of things regularly, like the government of Egypt just came out against Elon Musk. It was like, Elon, the aliens did not build the pyramids. How insulting to our people to say that we were not capable of possibly doing that. And granted, there has been no modern engineering feat. Like, they've tried numerous times to build the pyramid to scale in a scale amount of time, and even with modern-day apparatus, they can't seem to do it. True. We have yet to prove that humans didn't build the pyramids, so everything else is hearsay and conjecture. As far as we know right now, human beings built it. There was one dude that built Coral Castle, and he didn't have any heavy lifting machinery or things like that. So, Is it a possibility? Yes, it is a possibility. But it's also a possibility that there was some help or some knowledge that came from a previous civilization. You know, like we're saying, it doesn't necessarily have to come from extraterrestrial origins. According to even Egyptian chronicles, the history and founding of mankind and the Egyptian people go back for tens of thousands of years before them. So,
well, yeah, look at the Egyptian priest when Solon came to visit, what they told him, you know, they told him, what do you consider ancient Greek history? And he went back and started telling them, and they stopped him and said, that's nothing. You guys are babies, children. You've forgotten your real history.
Yeah.
You are actually 1,000 years older than we are, and you don't even know it.
Yeah, you don't even remember.
You've lost that data. And I tell people in my newest presentation, you know, we quote Sumerian culture so much today.
Yeah.
We talk about Sumer being probably the cradle of, you know, where society originated, and it's the oldest. People are surprised when I tell them that we didn't even know Sumer existed 160 years ago.
No.
It's a recent discovery.
Yeah.
The Bible speaks nothing of it. There's like a single thing that talks about, I believe it's called Shinar, and they don't even really know if that was a discussion on Sumer, but the ancient Egyptians, the Akkadians, the Babylonians, they had no clue that the Sumerians existed. We had no clue until around 1850 that they existed. And then it took 20 years of anthropologists, archaeologists, and other scientists fighting to finally say, okay,
yeah,
maybe there was this culture that existed, and they are.
But it took up until the last 50, 60 years for it to be accepted, the fact that Zoroastrianism was the first monotheistic religion, not Judaism.
And 60 years ago, they said that the Olmec didn't exist. There was no way.
That's right. They were fantasy.
And yeah, look, now it's common belief that
that's right.
They're the oldest. And what's
and we
even
got
scarier
statues.
Is I can prove that there's a pre or a proto Olmec even before them.
That's right. That's
from Mesoamerica, and that's what I show. But right now, they'll refuse to believe that. But in 20 years from now, it may just be common thought. Oh, yeah, that's the way it is.
And that's just it. You know, it really does. We say it on this show all the time. If you want to get into the original conspiracy theory, folks, we just re-looped around to it in the last 5 years. And that's that the Earth is flat. The original conspiracy theory was that the Earth was round. You were burned at the stake. Man, you were excommunicated from the church if you went around teaching people that the Earth was round, or that the sun was the center of the solar system. It was not until people sat around in closed rooms with open minds that these discussions happened, and that the science came about to prove it. But it was good people like, you know, Galileo, Leonardo da Vinci, who himself found out the things from autonomy that he found out through carrying on vivisection and dissection secretly. So often we find out that these ways of science that we came to us through the means of cabal to begin with. And it's the fact that people were willing to suffer in silence to get the truth out. Much like you're saying, to take some of this information to modern science would be to face ridicule. And that's horrifying. I do not consider that scientific principle. I do not consider that scientific curiosity. And I find it extraordinarily worrisome and troubling. Myself, whenever you have scientists that aren't willing to consider something outside of the realm of their calculated possibility.
Yeah, it's interesting too that it seems to take somebody completely outside of science to make these discoveries. There was a really famous author. His name was H.S. Bellamy, and he had a lot of. He wrote about before the flood, the great deluge, and talked about Tiwanaku quite a bit, and had these theories about what was taking place. Well, as you delve deeper into who this H.S. Bellamy is, you find out that more than likely that was just a pen name he used when he wrote his books in English, and that his real name was Rudolf von Westenbrug, and that he was the equivalent of a lieutenant colonel in the SA, the Sturmabteilung.
Wow.
So the Nazis. And that just tells you that there's this individual that's working for the Nazi government that has this huge, just this drive to find out about ancient South America. And you find out that this individual was hooked up with the Ancient Astronaut Society in Zurich, Switzerland. And so now you have the power and the funding of the Nazi Party.
Wow.
Just like in the movie Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, that people don't realize this was for real.
That was a real thing.
Yeah.
There was the Thule Society. There were numerous Nazi societies that were researching into the occult, into occult practices, into occult artifacts, into like every one of those movies. Even the name Ravencroft alluded to in Indiana Jones is a real researcher into it. So, yeah, these fables that we've been told even are based on grains of truth, folks. It's fascinating to go through and start really finding these little tidbits of history, like you were saying about the Olmecs not being accepted as part of science until very recently. It happens regularly, and to know that there are people out there right now that are doing research into the location out there at Skinwalker Ranch, into places like you were saying, Blind Frog Ranch, where you were in the surrounding area. It's fantastic. Any data gathering that can go on is always a plus. Tell people where they can go right now to find any of this data. Has any of it been published yet? Where can they go to keep track of updates, James?
Well, like you had said, they have already gotten through season one of the History Channel, Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch. So there's that availability. There's multiple. I'm trying to remember. I have a couple presentations online. I believe you can go onto YouTube through me or through Phoenix MUFON or Orange County MUFON to find them. And I go into extreme detail in regards to the indigenous people and present the actual petroglyphs, pictographs, artifacts. There's historical data. I've done a lot of historical research that's in these lectures as well, showing some pretty strange phenomena that was captured by the government during a flyover for Google Earth or something. But you can also, I believe there's quite a few books on the topic. Unfortunately, they seem to regurgitate the same thing with very little of the scientific data.
Yeah.
Luckily for us now with Brandon owning the ranch, that data is going to become available hopefully in the near future. How Eric is going to release that, I'm not sure. But there'll be some actual scientific data points available for people to look. And, you know, they're just collecting it. What you make of it, they're going to leave up to, you know, up to the person that's reading over it.
Yeah.
To, you know. But what's great right now is the fact that as more and more of this becomes public knowledge and is available for the public, hopefully those people that are investigating the topic will come together, share yeah. that data and information, or allow for more data collection to be available in areas that were off limits before.
Or I was going to say, you know, even with somebody financing like Vogel, it's the fact of setting up an egg type project where people like kind of like what SETI did, where you can use a node of your computer to process information on their behalf, that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah,
I think that would be a very forward looking approach to processing some of this information and getting it
Absolutely.
Done rapidly.
Yeah, and people need to remember, it's not just the ranch. This what's taking place
yeah.
up there is in this
it's a
area
whole valley.
Yeah, exactly. It encompasses a good portion of the western part of the Uinta Basin.
Yep.
And it obviously, at some point in time, even thousands of years ago, it was seen in three different locations by three different groups of indigenous people. So we're talking about that area of aerial phenomena being present in a spot that was seen for miles, in order for very similar things
yeah.
to have, you know, been logged in rock art in different locations in almost a triangulated, you know, I could create a triangle out of it, out of the three points where
yeah.
the glyphs are. So you're talking about a larger area than just the ranch, but the Bottle Hollow Reservoir, which is at the south end of the reservation, then the Mesa that has Skinwalker Ranch at the south end, and the Skinwalker Ranch itself seem to be very close to that focal point of what's happening. And what's really kind of crazy is there even seem to be geoglyphs that have been created by the Ute Nation on their reservation out of the roads. And you have interesting things taking place where their Veterans Memorial is now.
Interesting.
So it makes you wonder, did they wait to destroy their old resort and take it apart once they were able to put something that they knew would keep people from being able to investigate what's underground?
Yeah.
You know, you put a Veterans Memorial and no one's going to mess with that. Because of what it represents, so
yeah,
you're stopping anything from being looked at underneath. So obviously, we need to branch or expand where we're looking for this phenomena to take place, and where the focal point lies, which could very well be underground, especially where Bottle Hollow Canyon used to be, which is now Bottle Hollow Reservoir. You know, I went back and found that in the 1950s, there looked to have been an airstrip that was where the reservoir is now that led right into the side of the canyon. How is that possible? You know, that's a bad idea if you're landing airplanes.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. That is not the most optimal for, well, is it the most optimal for putting your hangar or for hiding a hangar or for having something along those lines there, camouflaged?
Exactly.
So, yeah, like we're saying, to have things like that out there, to know about Dulce Base up the road in Mexico, to know about Area 51 down the road in Nevada, to know about, I mean, the whole area is bespeckled with such things. But to know that this history goes back well into the Native American tradition and that it has carried forth and is even to this day befuddling and baffling science, I think is the really phenomenal part of it. And to know that there are people like you out there actively researching it, does me a great service to know that there are people like you out there that actually actively care about finding the truth behind this, not trying to cover it up, not trying to just keep the scientific status quo. It really is, let's let the investigation take us where the information and where the evidence takes us, and leave it at that.
Yeah, it definitely needs to. I think that's the only way that we're going to be able to advance to the public that information.
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
Because it seems like you know you're pulling teeth without Novocaine when it comes to big business or the government.
Well, yeah, I mean, good luck getting any Freedom of Information requests out about it. Good luck getting anything other than a really cheeky interview out of Robert Bigelow. It really is up to the science from this point forward for the next piece to find out exactly what is going on out there at Skinwalker and the surrounding areas. James, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. Tell everybody where they can go to get their copy of The Shapeshifter Scare and your other books.
Oh, absolutely. You can go to amazon.com/author/James Keenan, and all my books are there. They're available on Amazon or online at Barnes & Noble as well.
And while you're online, please do hold the line for us real quick, James. While you're online checking all that out, please make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find our great knowledge vault with all kinds of declassified material, court documents, hack documents, scientific studies, philosophy stuff, even life skills like survival, things like that. Stop on by, check it out today. dudesandbeer.com/knowledge is the URL for that. While you're there checking that out, make sure to check out HC Universal Network. That is our parent network. You can find great shows there like Yes But Why Podcast, Talking Sound Podcast, Scary Dad, Richard Spaceoff Show, Billion Realities, Kicking and Sticking Fantasy Football, all kinds of great stuff. Stop on by, check it out, everyone. Podcast. Until next time, take care of yourself, take care of each other. We'll talk to you soon.
Download the official Bye-bye. Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.